Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book's titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. Also a tool I can use to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, print it off, use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the active use of that tool has improved the quality of their life and relationships. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a discussion. We are also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 264th day of the year, and that means the lesson for today reads, I am surrounded by the love of the Creator. The commentary reads, Father, you stand before me, behind me, beside me, in the place I see myself, and everywhere I go. You are in all the things I look upon, the sounds I hear, and every hand that reaches for my own. In you, time disappears, and place becomes a meaningless belief. For what surrounds your son and keeps him safe is love itself. There is no source but this, and nothing is that does not share its holiness that stands beyond your one creation, or without the love which holds all things within itself. Father, your offspring is like yourself. We come to you in your own name today to be at peace within your everlasting love. My brothers and sisters, join with me in this today. This is salvation's prayer. We must not join in what will save, must we not join in what will save the earth and the world along with us? Pam Grout's Course in Miracles Experiment book, Lesson 264, is titled Settle for More. She quotes Deepak Chopra as saying, while you're caught up in why he didn't return your call, galaxies all across the cosmic horizon are tumbling into the unknown faster than the speed of light. Pam writes, we humans are an awful lot like Dobby, the house elf in the Harry Potter books. Thankfully, we don't have the green tennis ball eyes or the long bat-like ears, but we do treat ourselves in much the same way. Like Dobby, we continually settle for less. We refuse to accept fully accept our good. The universe is trying like bloody hell to pour out blessings, and we're too busy composing snarky tweets that we don't even notice the universe pouring out these blessings. When Professor Dumbledore hired the heroic elf to work in the kitchen, he offered 10 galleons a week and weekends off, but Dobby wanted no part of it. He insisted on a single galleon and only one day off per month. When Dobby, who always referred to himself in the third person, explained his pay negotiations to Hermione, he said, Dobby beat him down, miss. Dobby likes freedom, but he isn't wanting too much, miss. That's us. We never want too much, never seeing our own beauty, never recognizing that we have the power to create worlds. And like Dobby, who often inflicted injury upon himself, we punish ourselves for simply being who we are. We may not hit ourselves in the head or iron our hands as Dobby did, but we certainly iron our hair, hit ourselves physically every time we look in the mirror, and constantly try to, quote, improve, close quotes, our perfect selves. I prefer what British artist Ruby, etc. posted on Instagram. Quote, the only problem with my body, question mark, my brain for assimilating the concept of problem areas, close quotes. So today I say to myself, to Dobby, and to every humanoid on the planet, you are a perfect angel, goddess, rock star, and I am so very, very proud of you. Come on down and scoop up your gifts. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout for today. And as usual, we have about 50 minutes left to entertain your comments or questions, to remind people that we are on a Tuesday, which means that tonight we have a MindShifter support group available, absolutely free. We have an upcoming Integrative Mental Health Summit, all the information about that being held the October 8th, 9th, and 10th. Virtually on the internet. All the information about that is available at Mental Health Integrative Mental Health Summit.org. And the information for joining us in our MindShifter support group tonight is available at MindShiftersAcademy.org. There's a separate login information page for the Tuesday group and a separate one for the Thursday group. Please feel free to join us or pass that information along to anybody you think might be interested. We spend some time checking in with people after the week or 4 or 5 days since our last connection, and then we either start doing processing and worksheets right away or we listen to an hour of one of our favorite teachers about the basic work that we do here. And or something that has struck somebody recently that's interesting from a spiritual or psychological perspective. And then we have about an hour's worth of or more of time for processing and doing worksheets, et cetera. And we'd be happy to have you join us or pass that information along to somebody that you think would benefit from it. I'm having a problem with my Kindle. I was trying to pull up something from Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life. And I'd been reading some highlights from that book talking about his process of being aware, creating a system for increasing our ability to be awake and aware in the moment, to be in the presence moment. He writes, "You're never a victim, and considering yourself as one is never more than a thought and a belief. Even when you feel like a victim, you will discover that as soon as you bring yourself into the present moment, your thinking will stop and very quickly that feeling will be gone. You will learn to set yourself free through the power of presence." He suggests that you can watch what happens when you believe something and notice how it makes you feel, whether that's feeling angry, afraid, loved, or safe. You don't have to automatically believe what you think, whether it's about yourself, your life, your illness, or anyone else, especially if it makes you unhappy or causes you to bring unhappiness to others. This is the core of the Byron Katie work, where she says, "I only suffer when I believe my negative thoughts." So deep truths are woven equally through all these great teachings. And when I'm reviewing these, I'm looking for how they're similar. I know that when someone creates a system or a technique, they have a level of investment in defining how different they are from other things. I had the occasion recently to read the book Brain Spotting. And one would think that this is a technique unlike anything that's ever been developed. And yet, there are parts of it where he acknowledges that it's very, very similar to several other things. He's got a piece or two that he thinks nobody else has. And yet, if you look around at enough different things, you find, you know, that's not really the case. There are other people who do this, just follow the person and just let their energies guide you and don't do anything once you get there, but just observe and be with it fully. And then the magic of transformation happens inside the person. That's, you know, essentially what happens with Michael Rice's worksheet and Ho'oponopono and Byron Katie's work and Diedrich Wolzak's work and G.P. Walsh's inner reconciliation, very, very much the same. The dynamic that induces the change is not the conscious logical mind thinking its way through to something. It's this higher awareness. Once we've opened up and let the memory come into awareness, once we remove the energetic blocks to the full embrace of the memory, whether it's traumatic or otherwise, once we do that and we stay present with it, when we stay tuned into it, the memory and all of its energies, healing happens, integration happens, resolution happens. And to one degree or another, each of these processes has a little bit of something that someone must do. They must at least hold the intention of being with the fullness of the memory and the experience. And once they do that, and don't try to do too much else with it, and just allow and notice what physical energy shifts, what mental emotional energy shifts happen, that's when what most of these people discover, that's when the body, the mind, the soul, the spirit, the energy system does its healing. And it is not directed by the conscious logical mind. It is not, you know, you're never going to find a solution to your mental emotional issues in what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence, which is essentially applying the process of thought to try and unravel a problem that thought itself created. So whether it's Richard Moss or Guy Finley or Diedrich Wolzak or Dr. Michael Rice, most of these very powerful, very effective teachers are guiding us to be willing to see and ask and be shown more than do, more than fix, more than think about or process it with an intellectual eye. Here's something from Richard Moss that's very similar to what I have in my bottom line observations, where I say, what happens to me and around me in my life is nowhere near as important as how I choose to interpret and respond to those events. Richard Moss writes, more than the suffering of actual mental or physical illness, more than dying and death itself, the suffering created by thoughts that divide us within ourselves or between each other creates the greatest source of human misery. Just think about that. The thoughts that divide us within ourselves or between each other creates the greatest source of human misery. We are used by our thinking because it consistently puts us into opposition within our lives. We rarely say yes to life as it is. Instead, we continually tell life how it should be. And this is exactly what Michael Singer talks about in his work, where his second book that I'm aware of is titled The Surrender Experiment, which essentially is surrendering to life and the opportunities that come up in life far more than resisting them. And he talks about, in an existential sense, in an ultimate sense, being willing to step back and be in the observer mode more and more in life as the energy of life moves through us and around us, and simply revel in it, simply feel it fully in allowance and acceptance. You suffer because of the thoughts you have about yourself and the situation, not because of who you really are or what the situation is. That's from Richard Moss. He has a point in the book where he talks about how presence can diminish pain. Specifically, physical pain varies moment by moment with your state of mind, or more precisely, with how present or not present you are. So does your vitality. When you're caught up in the thoughts that generate fearfulness or despair, physical pain can worsen and actually weaken you. The moment you relax into the present and your thinking becomes quieter, the pain signal may well decrease and your vitality increases. So, 563-999-3581. We've got 40 minutes left. We have time for comments, questions, suggested topics. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? He goes on to say, because there is no way to actually characterize who you really are as a human being, as an aware being, Your ego has to find a way for you to believe in your own separateness. The ego can't be neutral. It can't see you or this very moment as it actually is. That would be pure awareness itself. So in one way or another, your ego has to make you stand out, has to make you special. Whether it makes you better or worse than somebody, it's the same thing. It does this in one of two ways, by telling you a story about yourself that makes you either more or less than you really are. And when the ego's stories make you smaller, you call it a depressive specialness. He calls it a depressive specialness. And when that ego puffs you up with a sense of superiority, he calls that grandiose specialness. You might presume that being superior is a better or more desirable form of specialness, but in fact, the superiority cuts you off from intimacy with others just as the negativity does, just as the depressive specialness does. Believing that you are inferior does the same thing as believing that you are superior. So no matter whether it puffs you up or shrinks you down, the ego's project of making you special isn't helping you become healthy and whole. The ego isn't a bad thing or even a thing at all. Guy Finley calls it a mechanical level of consciousness. It's just a process that runs. It's like the momentum of a ball rolling down the hill. Richard Moss says, it is just a constantly regenerating mental construct based on unconscious identification with stories you've been telling yourself in only slightly changed forms ever since your childhood. While everyone is unique, when I speak of how the ego makes you special, I'm referring to the emotional quality of your sense of separateness. So, the emotional quality of your sense of separateness, whether you feel inferior or superior, grandiose or depressed, either pole strongly influences how you view yourself and react to people and situations. Grandiosity tends toward anger and impatience. Depressiveness tends toward compliance and withdrawal. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Yeah, I just, you know, it's so interesting because I keep coming back. I mean, I found this in my journal yesterday. I was looking for something I had written about, and I came across an entry, I think it was a couple months ago, where I had written about everything being equal. And that I find, and I had forgotten about it, you know, I kind of like, it like served me really well for a little bit, and then I kind of like got lost in the dream again, and then when I read about it again, it, you know, like in my own journal, but, you know, I kept getting this message from all these different teachers about everything being equal, and so what you just read from Richard Moss and saying, you know, it's the exact same thing. I mean, whether you feel superior or inferior, it has the exact same effect. And I just want to offer a little visual, because visuals always help me. I know, you know, everyone processes things a little differently, but for some people, having a visual helps. And what I had drawn in my journal was an equilateral upward-facing triangle. And at the apex, the point at the apex of the triangle, I wrote unity consciousness, and then the line, the bottom line of the triangle that has the two points, I wrote duality consciousness. And then I put a fourth point right in the center of that bottom line, directly below the apex point. And I just actually picture myself standing in that triangle, my feet on that center point of that bottom line, recognizing that everything is equal, whether it's good, bad, right, wrong. I mean, none of those things actually exist. Everything is equal because everything on either side of that center point is illusion. So you can't have one illusion that is better or worse, more right, more wrong than another illusion. They're all illusions. And I see myself just in perfect alignment with that top point. You know, my head is there in unity consciousness, where again, everything is equal because everything is God. So it's like either everything is God or everything is illusion. And what I find is as I, you know, I'm just going through my day and I feel myself being pulled to one direction or the other on that bottom line. And then it's like I catch myself and I go, oh, that's just an appearance. Everything is equal. And I just realign myself in that center. And it's, you know, it just seems to be a process that works for me to have that visualization where I just keep recentering myself and recognizing that whatever is on either side is equal. And it totally takes you out of a place of judgment. Because if everything is equal, there's nothing to judge.
Well, anything that would help you do that is useful, right?
That's yeah.
The whole point is, Richard Moss says, the purpose of this book is to give you a choice between being driven by your ego or being aware of its game plan. And what you're just talking there about is a visual aid to keep you aware of the game plan. The game plan has you choosing one illusion over another. That's the ego's game. Ego deals in illusion, not in actuality.
Right. And the other thing I see, too, is like in that, from that top point of the triangle, I see a pendulum that swings back and forth. Now, this is time. It swings back and forth between the two other points. And it's like, it's that constant motion, and it's like if you would stop the pendulum, right, it's just going to hang straight down. And there again is that visual of just being in perfect alignment in the center. And yeah, that's, for some reason, that helps me. And so I just thought I would offer it because it might help others who like to have some sort of a visual.
All right, lovely. Lovely. It is useful to have a variety of different ways to conceptualize this because we have been so thoroughly programmed into the ego patterns and belief system that we are not even aware. I mean, he just talked about that in one of the readings that I just did. We're not even aware of how thoroughly programmed our egoic thoughts are and how much we've identified with these things since childhood. So every little aid to my increased awareness, whether it's, you know, a visual or an auditory or a kinesthetic sense that can help me realize when I've gone off the center or away from actuality, that would be a help.
Right, right. That's so funny, too, because where I'm sitting right now, I'm like right in front of my own pendulum clock, which stopped back in February for no apparent reason, and it's just been perfectly still ever since. And it's like I didn't know I was going to talk about a pendulum a moment ago, and then it's like, oh, and here I'm sitting in front of my own pendulum clock that stopped, you know. And it's like so weird because I just keep, every time I pass the clock and I recognize, oh, it's still stopped, it's like I just have this feeling of time out of time. It's time out of time. It's almost like I always feel like this time that we're in right now, it's the opportunity to be in time out of time or something. It's just the energy right now.
Well, that's just presence, right? You're talking about what Richard Moss is talking about this whole book is in the present moment, there is no time.
Right.
In the present moment, there's no suffering. That's just, all there is. What's here now?
Yeah.
Remember the book Lizards Eat Butterflies, and he talks about how the vast majority, the actuality is that the vast majority of moments that any human being has been alive on the planet have been monotonously safe and boring. Monotonously safe. Right? The vast majority of my day, I'm not getting hit by a drunk driver. I'm not having the avalanche crash down on the cabin. I'm not being chased by a tiger. Even
right.
if I've had all of those things happen in my life, they're a tiny fraction of the time I've spent in existence. And most of the time, my heart is beating, my lungs are breathing, the food's digesting. For those of us who are lucky enough, their hair is growing. All these things are just happening automatically. And yet we're training ourselves. We've been trained and we train ourselves to focus on how it isn't what we want or what's missing or what isn't, you know, in our eyes, perfect. That whole egoic thing that Richard Moss is talking about here. So any little tip like your visual representation that can help you wake up and realize, wait a minute, in this moment, everything's okay. That's a really good thing to have, is those tools, those tips, those techniques to keep us grounded, loving kindness meditations, et cetera, mantras that resonate with our energy system. Those are wonderful things to have because they help us recognize what's true, what's actual in the moment.
Yeah, and the other part of that triangle visualization that I like so much is one of the things I wrote in my journal when I drew it was that if you try to get up to that point of unity conscious any other way than going to that center point and creating that perfect balance, you're just trying to climb a slippery slope. It's not going to happen. It can't happen any other way. But if you're right in the center in alignment with that top point, it's like a natural, and we see it as like, here's another thing that came to me. It's like the stairway to heaven. It's just there's a natural, you can go straight up, and there's no effort involved in it. There's no effort at all. It's the end of effort. It's just, you're just in alignment. And what else was, I was going to say that, yeah, the other thing for me, and it has been a struggle because I recognized years ago that if I think that there's something wrong with something and that I need to fix it, if I actually, and it could be anything, if I actually start the action of fixing it, now I've made that thing even more real. Like I've made it like, I mean, it can't be an illusion if I start an action of trying to fix something, right? In my mind, it can't be an illusion. It's something real. And so that's one of the things that I don't know if you have any advice for this, but that's one of the things that I have struggled with.
What is one of the things?
Well, that if I see something, and for example, like for me, the last 20 years, it's been about like restoring this house that I bought. And, you know, I've spent, oh my goodness, that's been my project. And when I first started to recognize that, wait a minute, if I think something needs to be fixed or corrected and I take an action towards that, I'm making it actually more real to myself, like the imperfection. And that, isn't it just a waste of effort and time to think that I need to go about fixing something? So that's it. I get caught in this trap, I think. I just stopped. I stopped everything, like working on the house for like a year, just so I could learn to relax, because I was always doing. And
when did you stop that for a year?
That was when I retired, which was
that more than a year ago?
Yes.
Okay. So my question for you is, since that happened and you took that time out, have you been more productive in what you've wanted, getting things done that you wanted to get them done around the house than you were before you were in it as a must-do or it's broken or I have to fix it?
I think I've just been more unwilling to sacrifice my time and energy to it. So in some cases, I just let things go. In other cases, I hire someone else to do it rather than thinking, oh, I need, you know, I should do this myself. I mean, my life's gotten better.
So the corollary question is, are you happier with your life since you've taken that year off and slowed down from the shoulds?
Oh, yes, definitely.
There's your litmus test, right? What's everybody going for? Abraham talks about this a lot. What is it you want when you say you have to have that relationship or that sports car or that new house? What is it you really want? You want the feeling you think you're going to have when you get it.
Right, the happiness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The happiness, the contentment, the feeling, the synchronicity, the compassion, whatever it is, put whatever word you want on it. But you're going for a feeling.
Right.
Or.
And you'll never permanently
or,
through.
Right. Or the numbing out or the cessation of a pain.
Right.
Right. I've worked with some people who just, it doesn't matter what the substance is. They've come to call themselves addictive personalities. But many times when people say they have an addictive personality, when we start looking at it, their adverse childhood events, their traumas in their life are many and varied. And what they're doing with their, quote, addictive personality is they're looking for a way to fill a hole, heal a wound, you know, numb out to a perceived deficit. So they're running from something, and they're
mm-hmm.
using person, an activity, a food, a substance, a drug as the escape mechanism. And when they do the work of discovering the wound and healing or integrating, you know, the knowledge of that experience and its impact on their belief system, they find time and time again that kind of addictive personality they had, when, if they're willing to do that kind of work, it's sometimes quite extensive work, but if they're willing to do that, they find time and time again that their addictive personality kind of melts away. And they get able to be like Richard Moss is talking about, comfortable in the presence moment. Comfortable, I used to say this phrase all the time. If you find somebody who's comfortable in your own skin, in their own skin, if you're comfortable in your skin, you're going to be comfortable being around them. If you're not comfortable in your own skin and they're comfortable in their skin, it's going to either draw you to them like a moth to flame or you're going to be repelled, depending upon mm-hmm. how strong your own core sense of self is. Right? Another way
yep.
Dale Ellen Hoffman talks about it is the light reveals things. The light of awareness, the light of consciousness, it reveals things. Well, if you have somebody who's deeply wounded and hiding that from themselves, and they come near somebody who's shining a bright light of consciousness and acceptance and allowance and compassion, it's going to stir up everything unlike love in that person, to borrow Michael Rice's phrase for it, and they're going to get very uncomfortable. Dale Ellen Hoffman talks about how the light you shine when you're loving and you're around somebody who's got lots of bushel baskets hiding their true essence as love from their awareness, it stirs up and shakes up those bushel baskets, and they become aware of the garbage in them, and they're going to blame you for it. They're going to think you're causing them all this discomfort, when really it's the light in you resonating the light in them. It's the truth of who you are resonating the truth of who they are. Yet if the truth of who I am – is hidden underneath all of these traumas and negative beliefs, I'm going to become aware of those traumas and negative beliefs as the truth in me gets activated. As Michael says in every worksheet, you know, I choose love with my true nature. I choose to be aware of it, directly, consciously aware of it. That's going to amplify its energy, and that's going to stir the love in everyone involved, everyone around me. Well, that's great if their love is right there near the surface and pure and easy. But if their love is covered in all kinds of garbage and bushel baskets and that stuff starts bubbling up when I'm around and I'm being loving, they're going to think I'm causing them to feel all that pain and upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that. And I think that that's a lot of what happens, because when we're babies and we're little kids, I mean, we are, well, you know, we are that presence of love, and it stirs things up in the family.
Right. And our essence is that we are that presence of love, and yet we don't come in as a blank slate. Right. We've got
right.
the energies, positive and negative, that are on the mark, you know, center, target, off target, et cetera, off center and off the target together. We have all those energies that come in from the generations, and that's woven into and through who we are as this energetic being, as the experience of the creative energy expressing in form. So it's, you know, it's not just a simple everything is perfect until the world crushes it. It's, if somebody's coming into being, they're coming in with their ancestral energies as part of their system. And if
right.
somebody comes in and they have just the absolute perfect parents, loving, you know, they had an immaculate conception, which doesn't mean that the parents never physically had sex. It just means the parents were consciously aware of wanting to bring another entity into physical expression. And they wanted to do it through the loving, conscious extension of their own loving energy. That's another way to interpret the phrase immaculate conception from the ancient Aramaic. And if somebody does that and they raise that child as lovingly as they know how, that child is still going to have issues for his or herself to work out. It's the nature of our communal living, right, of our liturgy, our common work. To think differently is to say that, you know, what is bad. So that means I'm going to label it. I'm going to move in, as you're talking about, to one side or the other of that pendulum and think this illusion is better or worse than that illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have these tools and I know how to use them, and I can help that person focus on their true nature as I keep focusing on mine, and I actively work to use the tools to remove whatever is less than that awareness of that loving nature from my energy system, my life gets better. If I'm not willing to do that, it doesn't get better. It keeps spiraling downward.
Yep. Yeah, and I recognize that. I mean, I totally agree that we bring with us all of our own unresolved stuff from our past life experiences, if you believe in that, as well as this from our ancestors. And that's why we start having experiences as soon as a baby that don't feel good, because it's again, it's almost just like life is just trying to show you, this is what you haven't dealt with yet. This is what you haven't dealt with yet. And, you know, all the people around you and the circumstances and the situations are all like a mirror showing you this is what you haven't dealt with yet. And, you know, I've just seen that more and more clearly with the things that happen in my life. And what I have become aware of just through divine grace of what I experienced, some of the experiences I had in a past life. And it's like, I see, oh, wow, that's why this started happening to me as a child, because this happened to me before I came into this lifetime, and I never resolved that. You know, so you see it's a continuation. And we just keep being given opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to see it and to resolve it. And I think that's what life is, you know, until it's not really life. And that's the thing, like, you know, in that triangle, the two bottom points, life and death, you know, like, how we experience life until we get to that state of pure presence or unity consciousness, that's not really life. It's an illusion of life. And death is an illusion too. I mean, there's no end point. Yeah, we may drop the body, but, you know, then we'll just come back in another body, you know, and then that top point, that's divine life. That is life with the eternal life. You can't compare it. I don't think you could possibly compare it to what most people consider life.
Well, we can, and we do, but that's just the mind doing its comparison thing. Right.
Right.
But in the actuality you're talking about, there's no separation, so there can't be comparison.
Right.
From here in Richard Moss's book, he says, one way you can know that you're being aware rather than hijacked. See, what he's trying to do is get people to understand that there is a whole different way to be awake and aware and present in the moment than what our culture has taught us, to be thinking and doing, etc. So he says, one way you can know that you're being aware rather than hijacked by your ego is that you don't beat yourself up when you find that you're moving into either kind of specialness, either the grandiose specialness or the depressive specialness. You just recognize it, right? You don't beat yourself up over it. And you say, oh, okay. You know, thank you for
exactly
letting me know that you're active, right, and that you're off the mark here.
That's exactly what I've been experiencing as I use this little visualization, and I recognize, oh, you know, it's either an oh no or an oh yes, either direction, and I go, oh no, everything's equal. And I immediately just, boom, it's over, you know, like, and I don't, judge myself for judging. I mean, because that's what really that is. If you catch yourself judging and then you judge yourself for that, it's like, well, that's no good.
Yeah, but when you catch yourself judging, his recommendation is you say, thank you.
Exactly.
Right. Thank you. Forgive me. It's almost like the Ho'oponopono stuff. Hey, I'm just going to recognize that I just became aware. So thank you for showing me that this story I was telling myself is causing my stress, and I don't have to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. And if I see something that, like, I don't like the looks of it or whatever, and I just keep telling myself, it's just an appearance. Don't, like, we buy into the appearance of things all the time. And I just keep reminding myself, it's just an appearance. It's nothing. It's nothing. Everything's equal. Like, don't make it into something. You know, it's like, and yeah, there's such a relief in that, just the freedom in just, oh yeah, it's just an appearance. Nothing real or actual, as I like the term actual that Michael uses, distinguish it from what we think is real or actual.
Yeah, so we're basically trying to build awareness that there's more than just the ego. Richard Moss says, you know, the ego doesn't know that it's a part of a larger field of intelligence, love, and support. It believes that it is this separate entity and a world unto itself. And that's how it defines itself, as being separate. But it, you know, this is my job as a higher awake being, is to educate my ego to the fact that it's not real the way it believes it's real. It is this part of my awareness that is there to serve me as I'm in the physical realm, and to be that, you know, the way of mastery says, a very stupid servant, not the God of me, not the boss of me, not the master, but the servant. And it doesn't know that. But it's a very useful thing to be able to remember, you know, the route that I need to take to drive home tonight, and to, you know, how to tie my shoes. And that's, you know, Michael Rice's talk about the biblical line that says, the eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep shall the darkness become? You know, some version of that. And he says, you know, if you look at the ancient Aramaic, it says, your perceptual mind is just the tool, the light for you to navigate this earthly life. And in the ancient Aramaic, the darkness meant hostility or fear. So if there's hostility or fear in your mind, you're not going to see things clearly. And you're going to bump into things, or you're going to create mental, emotional suffering for yourself. So your first job every time there's a negative emotional state is to stop. You know, you don't want to keep driving down the mountain road when it's dark at night. If your lights go out, you want to, oh, lights are out, I better turn the lights back on before I keep driving. I better restore awareness of my true nature to my mind before I decide to speak or act. And that's the best way to navigate safely through this physical realm. But, you know, the perceptual mind is not, it's like David Bohm talks about, the process of thought has fundamental flaw that makes it very, very unproductive to use in my mental and emotional conflicts. And one simple way to think about that is my process of thought is based on the input from the senses and how limited they are, and the fact that the basic operating system for my conscious logical thought is comparison, is judgment, is separation. Right, and so it's just like what he just said. The ego simply doesn't know that it's part of a larger field of intelligence. But my conscious logical mind is what gave rise to the ego, and it's based on this separation and judgment and identification with a part. So it can't experience infinite opportunities and possibilities for resolution the way awareness can. The way
right.
The higher self can, right?
Yeah, and Leonard Jacobson talks a lot about coming into right relationship with your ego, and I think that is so important. Because the last thing you want to do, and I didn't really like, I guess, you said it came from the way of mastery, you're calling it a stupid servant. Like, I would never want to, I guess, speak to my ego in that way. I mean, I'm always telling my ego it's safe, right? Because that's the part of me that feels it needs to protect itself, defend itself. It's the part that's afraid. So I'm always trying to assure my ego that it is safe, it is loved, and it is here to serve God. That what could be a greater honor? It's not, you know, I'm not trying to get rid of it. It is here for a wonderful purpose, a very high purpose, and I just think it's so important to start talking to your ego in those terms and to, you know, like as he says, come into right relationship with it.
Yeah, because the idea of trying to get rid of the ego or kill it is just a trap. You know, in the Way of Mastery, in one of the Darshans, he talks about how you will never dismantle your ego, because the you that thinks you want to dismantle your ego is the ego. Right. So you can loosen the effects of ego on you by becoming aware, by understanding it, right? By being that gentle presence that you're talking about and understanding it's there for a purpose, it's useful. It provides input. It helps me navigate the physical realm. There's all these different ways that you can talk about it. But it's this cultural and oftentimes reinforced by a family conditioning that says, you are your ego. That's all you are. You are the identification with it, et cetera. That's what creates the problems, not the ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's the misuse of, it's the misrepresentation of, it's the trying to make the ego be something it isn't, trying
right.
to make it be my whole identity. That's what creates the problems.
Yep. I agree.
On page 50 in Richard Moss's book, he says, the presence of awakening into greater awareness and presence is sometimes referred to as the death of the ego. In fact, many spiritual teachings talk about killing the ego. But the ego doesn't, and indeed shouldn't, die as you develop a high degree of presence. Rather, it ceases to rule your mind and determine your experience. Thereafter, it serves awareness by providing you a unique point of view, but no longer in a way that defines your identity and separates you or makes you special as either grandiose or depressive. It's just part of the process that's seen as a useful part of the process of navigating through life.
Yeah, and that unique point of view, I mean, it's also like, you know, the whole idea of diversity. I mean, if we were all exactly the same, that would be kind of boring, you know? I mean, it's wonderful that we're each unique. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, it sounds like that's what the ego provides. It's that.
Well, and there are those people spiritually who talk about, they conceptualize that we are here and having a physical experience because light, love, creation, God, source, whatever you want to call it, wanted to experience itself. And so it burst into, you know, billions of tiny lights shining back, reflecting upon itself, and that's how it has experience of itself. Otherwise, there is no self to have an experience of.
Right. Yeah, there's no experience at all.
There is just being. There is just presence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no object, observer, and observed. There's no foreground and background. There's just awareness.
There's just, I would call it nothingness, and that has the potential of everythingness. But in that state, it's really nothingness. And I think that's
well,
what scares
a lot of people. Well, of course, it's what our conscious, logical mind can't make any sense of because it is everything and nothing. And
right.
Our mind can't comprehend that. You know, but one of the great philosophers and spiritual teachers, physicists, all of them come to the realization that one of the hallmarks of any deep truth is that its opposite is also true. And our conscious, logical, rational minds, and I put rational in quotes there, can't comprehend that until we run into it. And then we fight like heck trying to argue about it. But how can you be, you know, how can the whole world fit on the head of a pin and each person be as big as a universe? You know, all of these things, sometimes people view them as koans that are just there, you know, riddles to occupy the mind. But at another level, there's another deep truth or another deep teaching that says these things are both true, that every opposite contains its opposite and everything in between it. And it's just our mind that creates the concepts of opposites.
Right. And it's just like, how can you be in God and God be in you? You know, I mean, I love these last couple lessons in A Course in Miracles, because it just, it, and the one to, especially today, you know, because I actually changed it a little bit, because it says, I am surrounded by the love of God. And it's like, well, I'm not just surrounded, I'm in it. Like, it's in me. It's both. And I love that.
Yeah, just leave it there, both and.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've taken us all the way through the end of the hour. Thanks for piping up here and having a discussion. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Michael and Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tan. Appreciate you.
Thank you,
and
good
let
sir.
Whoever had let you know that the app wasn't printing, I've been the last couple mornings up early talking to India, and they have now got the Apple uploaded. It'll probably take it a day for it to come up as an update on people's phones, and the Android they'll have up before the day's out. So those should be fixed, and thank you for letting
me
know.
All right, wonderful. Thank you. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, September the 21st, 2021, and our caller number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. It's an honor once again to be here, and I just heard the last few seconds of the conversation that Dr. Tim was having, and Ellen, and what it reminds me of or makes me think about, brings up in terms of thoughts, is the lesson from A Course in Miracles in the workbook, What is the World? And I think this is probably one of the most misunderstood and one of the most important lessons in the Course in Miracles, because it distinguishes things that most people don't distinguish. And I wish when the grammar was done in the course, one word had been redone in accord with truth, and that is the word world. And if they had in that lesson and throughout the course had a capital W on the word world to represent one state and a lowercase w on the world to represent the other. And until we distinguish that, it can become very confusing when they say, you know, the world. So in this case, we're going to capitalize as we go through this lesson, and where it's appropriate, and recognize the lowercase w. So this lesson starts out and it says, what is the world? And the answer is very simple. If you remember from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, our discussion of actuality and reality, remembering that perception is a construct of the mind. If it's based in what's stored in carbon-based memory, which for 99.999% of the people, 99.9999% of the time, then that perception comes from the past in carbon-based memory and obviously can't be true. And so when we think we see something out there that is a perceptual construct in our minds from the past, we're living in the lowercase w world, and that world does not exist except as an apparent memory. It is not real. We have made that world. So the first line in this lesson, the question is asked, what is the world, lowercase w? The world, lowercase w, is false perception. That's all. So when we live in a picture world, when we think we see things through our eyes, we're looking at something in the mind from the past. Go back to Yeshua, remember he said, you know, let the dead bury the dead, let the blind lead the blind. if we're locked in constructs out of carbon-based memory, out of the past by definition, and you know, I like to offer the definition of a word. What is a word? A word is a tool of communication. And whenever words or tools of communication are being used, it obviously indicates an interaction between two or more people. You know, in this case, you're being kind enough as an audience to listen, and I'm getting to speak. So I'm using words in order to transfer ideas, in order to communicate. Now, if you step back and observe your mind in operation, remember that's one of the skills we're inviting everybody to develop, to become the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. And if you watch your mind in operation right now, you'll notice there are words running in there. And they're not words that you're communicating with anyone outside of you. If words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, who's in there with you? Who's talking to who? Who's giving you the meaning of everything that you think you see? In fact, who's giving you what you see? Where's it coming from? I would offer it as a construct in the mind for most people, a construct from the past. It is false perception. That world doesn't exist, although virtually everybody thinks they see it out there, when the truth is, they're seeing it in here. That's why you can get six people in a courtroom who are at the same accident, or at least you think they were, and you listen to the descriptions, and their worlds, lowercase w worlds, their perceptual construct of the accident are so different, you'd wonder if they were at the same accident. They all experienced the same actuality, what actually occurred. And then each one had a construct in their minds from the past. And if we live in that world from the past, that's when we live in a world that doesn't exist, except as a construct from the mind. So the world, lowercase w, is false perception. It is born of error, and it has not left its source. Really important to recognize. You know, if you're in a world of hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, trauma, condemnation, you got to stop pretending. You got to stop telling yourself the lie that it's outside of you. If you're feeling it, you're feeling it because it's inside of you. And this particular sentence, it points out that it is born, one, born of error, and two, it has not left its source. And then it tells you what the source of that world is. And if we go to the opening words in the book of John, where we're told by the Greeks, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, that's not what it says. In Aramaic, it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Mind energy, the mind has this converter, this digital to analog converter. Mind energy is digital. Energy is digital. And the mind converts that digital information into a picture world, a false world, a world that doesn't exist. It's born of error, has not left its source. In other words, if it's of a disintegrative quality, it's disintegrative effects are happening within our own structure because it's not left its source. And then the Course gives this absolutely awesome piece of information. That world of false perception will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. So the false world is born of mind energy, of thoughts. And as long as you value it, you know, people can say, oh, you know, I don't want to rage anymore. I don't want to be upset anymore. I don't want to be in disturbance anymore. So, God, please take all that away. But you know, there's this one nasty person, and I need to reserve a little bit of rage just in case they come along so that I can protect myself from them. Well, guess what you just said to the Creator? I cherish rage. And as long as you cherish that thought, then the world it gives birth to will remain within you and continue to have its degenerative effect on you. So the world is false perception, born of error, has not left its source, and will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. When the thought of separation, in other words, there's you over there and me over here, has been changed to one of true forgiveness, will the world be seen in quite another light? Now, we just used the word world again. Should that world be uppercase or lowercase? I'd offer in this situation that should be an uppercase W. So when the thought of separation has been changed to one of true forgiveness, will the capital W world, in other words, what the Creator created, be seen in quite another light, and one which leads to truth, where all the world must disappear and all its errors vanish? Oh, wait a minute now. We got world being used twice in this sentence. If it's the same word and the same concept, it makes no sense. Let's capitalize the first W world and lowercase, as appropriate, the second W world as it's used in the sentence. So let's read it properly now. When the thought of separation has been changed to one of true forgiveness, the capital W world that the Creator created will be seen in quite another light, and one which leads to truth, where all the lowercase world, the perceptual constructs that you've made, must disappear and all its fears vanish. Now its source has gone and its effects are gone as well. In other words, you can tell, and remember that forgiveness is the tool of removal of the thoughts, the mind energy, that makes up the lowercase false world. You will know that you've forgiven, that you've actually worked through a particular issue, when not only does your mind not serve it up anymore, but the person or the people who showed up to play it out with you all of a sudden shift and change their behavior. So the effects are gone as well. And let's go back and check out how that happens. In Aramaic, Yeshua taught us that there was a feminine elemental force in us that was called Ruka Dikudsha. And the definition, you know, the Greeks translated those words as the Holy Spirit. Nothing about the Holy, a disembodied spirit being there. Ruka Dikudsha is a feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. So what is this lesson saying, this particular sentence? The world, capital W world, will be seen in quite another light, one which leads to truth. Who's going to teach you the truth? She who undoes the effects of your errors, Ruka Dikudsha. And all the lowercase W world will disappear, and all its errors vanish. It's conflicts, it's insanity, it's poverty, it's rage, it's guilt. Now its source is gone, and its effects are gone as well. Now, if you cherish your rage, if you cherish your fear, well, you know, I've learned when I was a little kid that if I quaked in fear, somebody came and hugged me and took care of me and protected me, and I didn't have to learn to be responsible. So you may cherish fear. And if you keep going around with fear, mind energy of fear, then its effects will appear in your physiology and in your life. It's up to you. Now, why would anybody do that? It's done, and the next paragraph tells us exactly. It's done in order to separate oneself from the conscious active presence of love. You know, if you've decided to cherish thoughts of fear or of rage, you know, I like it when somebody comes and pats me on the back and takes care of me, or rage, I like to be able to terrorize people so they stay away from me, then you cherish thoughts that create the world of false perception. That world, the Course says, now we're talking in the second paragraph, the lowercase W world, that world was made as an attack on God. It symbolizes fear, and what is fear except love's absence? Thus, the world was meant to be a place where the Creator could enter not. Now, which W have we got there? Have we got a cap or a lowercase? Thus, the world was meant to be a place where love could enter not, where the Creator could enter not. So obviously, it's the lowercase W world again. So blocking that presence of love, that way I can play in the realm of I'm weak and fearful, so somebody will protect me, or I'm angry and terrible, and somebody will run away from me. So that world was meant to be a place where love could enter not, and where the Creator's Son could be apart from him. Now, this is such a powerful line in the Course. I mean, catch this. Here was perception born. For knowledge could not cause such insane thoughts. But eyes deceive, and ears hear falsely. If we believe in that world of false perception, oh, we see all sorts of things happen that never happened. Something happened. But what my lowercase w world is showing me happened only happened inside of me out of a false memory and therefore is not real, never happened at all. But its effects will play out. So here was perception born. When we decided to make up thought structures apart from love. In other words, it's time to be always the observer, the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. It's always appropriate to be observing your mind in operation. And when you see an insane thought, what are insane thoughts? Mind energy based in hostility, rage, guilt, grief, drama, trauma, fear, intimidation, gossip, slander, vengeance. That's all mind energy that separates you from love, that plays out a picture world that convinces you or that you convince yourself with that love is not the truth. And it goes on to say, but eyes deceive and ears hear falsely. Now, mistakes become quite possible, for certainty is gone. Again, third paragraph, such a powerful, the key sentence is here. You know, what is the world? The world is false perception, born of error. Remain no longer in the thought that gave it birth to church. First paragraph. Second one, the world was made as an attack on love. And what is fear except love's absence? Here was perception born. Third paragraph, the mechanisms of illusion have been born instead. And now those mechanisms of illusion, the evidential mind, goes to find what has been given them to seek. Their aim is to fulfill the purpose which the world was made to witness and make real. We got a capital W world there, a lowercase. Every time you encounter that word in the course, you've got to distinguish which it is. And obviously, in this case, it's the lowercase world again. So their aim, that is these mechanisms of illusion, their aim is to fulfill the purpose which the world was made to witness and make real, the lowercase world, perception. They see in its illusions, but a solid base where truth exists. In other words, remember the other day we talked about, the world has taught you, the lowercase W world, the world of false perception, has taught you a huge, giant lie, and that is that you have two peepholes, little round holes in your head that you look out through and see what's going on outside of you. Oh, I saw that happen out there. It must have occurred. Excuse me, you have never in your life seen anything outside of you happen. You have never seen anything with your eyes. You don't see with your eyes, you see with your brain. The eye is a one-way valve. Information comes into that one-way valve. Frequencies of light carry information from the actuality as created by the Creator. And if thoughts of separation are resonated by those energetic frequencies, then the world of false perception will show you a picture that you lay over top of, as this lesson said, meant to keep you separate from the world of love. It will show you pictures based in whatever the thought disorder is. That's why we're always about looking at what's the thought disorder? What's the thought disorder that needs to be forgiven here? And so the actuality in which we live, move, and have our being is love. And if the energetic patterns that come from that actuality and enter the eye resonate thoughts of separation, then those thoughts will turn into the world of the construct that your mind shows you as perception. And you will see things that never happened, even though you saw them. And you never saw them happen outside of you because you can't see out through your eyes. You know, thinking that you can see out through your eyes is as ludicrous as I'm going to go and unhook the antenna on the back of my TV and I'm going to go look up the wires and looking up and out the wires, I'm going to see out through the antenna and what's out there. I mean, that's just silly. The fact that, I mean, I would suspect if you went to 99.999, add 1,000 nines to it, percent of people in the world, and you said, do you see what's happening outside of you with your eyes? They'd all say, oh, absolutely, certainly. I mean, that's what, and it's ludicrous. It's a joke. And so this lesson goes on to say, they is the mechanisms of illusion. The mechanisms see but a solid base where truth exists, upheld apart from lies. In other words, when one is in hostility or fear, they are sure that it's Bill's fault or Harry's fault or Mary's fault or Hortense's fault. Yet everything that they report is but illusion, which is kept apart from truth. Everything that perception reports to you, by definition, is information resonated out of the past, creating a construct that pretends to be the present. But there is no presence in that. And the reason they call the present is because whenever you're there, there is a gift. There is a presence called love. If you live in a loveless world, it's because you hold loveless thoughts that generate this world you see. And the world you see is Paul's false perception born of your error. And it's not outside of you. It's never left its source. And it never will. And when you finally choose to put the pen to the paper and do the work of forgiveness, this isn't something to just believe in. In fact, don't believe a word I'm saying. Take the tools and put them to work. Then you'll know as a fact that it works. So everything that these mechanisms of illusion report are designed to keep us apart from truth. Now, as sight, as this thing that you think you see outside of you, but is actually sight is a perceptual construct, as sight was made to lead away from truth, it can be redirected. Sound? Oh, yeah, I heard his voice. Excuse me. There is not one person in the world that has a voice. That's a fraud. That's a lie. Nobody in the world has a voice. We have this little thing called a voice box, a flap of skin. There's actually a cool video on YouTube, and it's, Mick Jagger, if I remember correctly. They've actually got a camera down Mick Jagger's throat when he's singing, and it shows his voice box. I mean, it's really quite awesome. So do I have a voice? Am I speaking right now? No. But there is a little flap of skin in my throat, and I've learned how to modulate it so that it modulates, that is, changes the flow of air over my vocal cords. And that flow of air causes molecules to move. It does not cause sounds. Sounds don't happen in the world. Your voice does not cause sounds. It causes air molecules to move. You happen to have a little drum in your ear that when those air molecules moving hit that drum, cause that drum to move. When that drum moves, it causes some bones to move that generate an electrical frequency that matches the air movement that came from the vocal cords firing and being modulated. And now that electrical frequency moving as a result, or pardon me, being generated as a result of the movement of that drum in your ear causes brain cells to fire. And now guess what you see? You get to see what has not left its source. You get to see what your mind energy is that produces the world from the past that you see. And most people, this is what led Yeshua to say, the dead bury the dead, the blind lead the blind. This is what most people call facts and actuality in the world. But it's the lowercase world. So now, as you do your work, everything is repurposed. Sounds become the call for love, and all perception can be given a new purpose by the one whom the Creator appointed Savior to the world. Once again, we're looking at lowercase world. And then the Course here says, follow his sight. That is, one who has corrected his mind, her mind, and returns to the actuality. Follow their light and see the world. Now, which world are we looking at? Uppercase, lowercase? Uppercase world. See the world as he beholds it. So now the actuality is present. Information comes in through the senses from the actuality, and because the world of false perception has been forgiven, has been removed, the actuality writes meanings in our minds, and we start to experience actuality, the world that the Creator created for us, the capital W world. Hear his voice alone in all that speaks to you. In other words, stop pretending that the words you heard came from somebody else. Your hearing, your listening happens in your brain the same as perception happens in your brain. Your listening reflects the content of your mind. If there is no content in you based in hostility or fear, if there is no mind energy apart from love in you, can't experience pain. And if there is mind energy based in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, trauma in you, generational or otherwise, then the world you see will be filled with that. And when you think you see it outside of you, you may effort trying to change it out there. Instead, seek to change your mind about the world. Once you've done that and you are in true perception, you move to from false perception to true perception, and then to enlightened perception, where your perception comes from your spiritual faculties rather than the past in your mind. So follow the one who has corrected their mind, see the world as that one sees it, hear that one's voice alone in all that speaks to you, and let him give you peace and certainty, which you've thrown away, but heaven has preserved for you in that one who's done the work. Let us not rest content until the world has joined our changed perception. Let us not be satisfied until forgiveness has been made complete. Why do we talk about taking this world to work to every mind, heart, and being on the planet? Because as long as we have millions and millions and millions of people who live in a world of false perception, there's going to be conflict, there's going to be rage, there's going to be war, there's going to be disease, suffering, pain, and trauma that is in the world, that is the world of false perception, and that will cause anomalies to appear in this energetic world. So let us not be satisfied until forgiveness has been made complete, and let us not attempt to change our function. We must save the world. And what does that mean? We're going to go out and save the world. Are we going to go out and fix everybody? No. No, what this means in this context is, as I do my work, then I get to live in the world as the Creator created, the uppercase world. And when I engage in that energetic pattern, and you and you and you and you engage in that only, we reach a space of critical mass. Remember, Yeshua talked about a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about if there are enough people to reach critical mass who live in the actuality of the created world, then together we will formulate a critical mass energy of truth, maintaining that world of truth within us the energetic pattern of it will become so overwhelmingly empowered by participation of that critical mass. And, you know, if you remember the concept of critical mass from your lab days in school, you know, there was a substance, and it was, let's say, a blue liquid. And you put a drop of another liquid in that was green, and you put another drop, and you put another drop, and another drop. You put 100 drops in, and still, well, there it was. It's a blue liquid. And then you put the 101st drop in. And when that 101st drop fell into the beaker, the blue liquid turned to a red solid. Critical mass was reached. You didn't change the whole structure. You have to pour all of the old substance out and put in totally new. You just had to reach critical mass. At this stage, in order for life to move forward at the next level it's designed for, each person who joins in cleaning up their own perceptual constructs, and you'll remember there's a line for another lesson in the course that says, the world is false perception. So going from here, and this other thought says, perception is a skill made up by you to take the place of what the Creator gave you in creation. The Creator gave you a gift. Go back and hold the newborn child. Just remember when you held that newborn and tap into the energy of that newborn. What was the newborn given? The newborn was given a life based in love. That's the only thing that's true about the newborn. And when we return to that, then perception is gone. Perception is healed. And at that point, those who made up that world of false perception to kick love out of their field will see it through the eyes of another mind. In the ancient teachings, that mind was called the mind of Christ. Christ is not a religious word. There are two minds. We've got physiology's mind, the mind of the so-called body, the energy system, carbon-based memory, shooting its mind energy off. And then we have the mind that was called the mind of Christ. Remember, they talked about Christ, your hope of glory, the mind of Christ in you. That is, there is a mind in you when you return to your true and normal state that only keys to the presence of love, lives out of the presence of love, and receives and projects only or extends only the presence of love. When that presence of love is extended and others choose to join in it, it's strengthened until we reach critical mass. And what it says is, when you behold it through the eyes of that mind, then what was made to die, that is, the world of false perception, can be restored to everlasting life. So why do people die? Well, you know, my background's in physics, and here's what I heard Einstein say: there's only energy. And energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It is eternal. Well, if there's only energy, and energy can neither be created nor destroyed, then we must be eternal. How do you take apart? How do you cause an eternal energy system to die? You've got to put an energy in it that doesn't belong in it. Are you willing to do the work required to be restored to, literally, the truth of what you were designed for, and that is eternal life? Energy is eternal. Your energy, you got to be eternal. Now, you can change the form of the energy by putting disintegrative energy into it, and it will change its structure. It will fall apart. It will appear to die. But that's a function of the quality of energy that you've engaged in. Our challenge to you is to always be on alert for what's moving in your mind, what moves in you that formulates the world constructed, the world of perception, that has not left its source. And when you see that it's of a disintegrative nature, you actually put the pen to the paper. You use the tool of forgiveness, not the mental masturbation of, oh, yeah, I know about forgiveness. You know, like, don't study this stuff. Do the work. Put the pen to the paper. And as you each, you know, disorder, each frequency that lands, and it doesn't matter, you know, if you put a disintegrative energy into your big toe, part of the mind functions through every cell in the body. If you put disintegrative energy into your big toe, somebody's going to come along and they're going to diagnose your big toe. Now, break down the word diagnose. Diagnostic. Diet is two, and agnostic is somebody who doesn't know. Diagnose is two who don't know, and that's how you've got the big toe disease. But there's only one disease. And that's a disintegrative frequency in the big toe that doesn't belong there. Now, I don't know how long you've been, or I've been, or we have been denying and hiding those kinds of energies from ourselves, but the day that you develop the skill to take the disintegrative energy out of your big toe, guess what's going to happen? Your big toe's going to heal. Now, if you put that energy into your kneecap, some diagnostician is going to come along. It'll probably be a longer Latin word than the one for the toe and tell you what your disease is in the kneecap. And in essence, it will be the kneecap disease. And or if you put it in the lung, the liver, the heart, or the brain, they'll have you a different big, long Latin name and a more expensive drug every time to treat it for the disintegrative energy in the lung, the liver, the heart, or the brain. But there's only one disease. Let's see, how does that go? The world is false perception. It is born of error. It has not left its source. It will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished. The world of dis-ease will disappear and all its fears vanish when you decide that you don't want to play with that source anymore. And then its effects are gone. That creates a space that welcomes in the presence of love. Remember the line from this lesson, what is fear except love's absence? The world, capital W, or pardon me, lowercase w, world, was meant to be a place where love could enter not, and where you could be apart from love. And oh, there are lots of people playing that. Here was perception born, for knowledge could not offer such insane thoughts. The mechanisms of illusion. It's time to be finished with them. The tool is that of forgiveness. Now, if you're using the forgiveness tool, wonderful. If you're not, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. Upper left-hand corner, there's a button that says Start Here. Click the Start Here button, and it'll walk you through several links that will teach you everything that we've learned over the last 50 years, 40 years. 50 overall doing this work, but 40 years specifically working with the Aramaic forgiveness process. And as you engage in that process, not believe it, not hear about it, not go, oh, isn't that fun? Isn't that intellectually stimulating? That's not what I'm here to deliver. I'm here to deliver a tool that you'll use. You know, I love how Gandhi said, he said, if you want potatoes, you got to use the hoe. If you want forgiveness, you've got to engage in the process. Go to the website, the worksheet's there. You can print it. You can actually do it live on the website, or you can print it off on your printer so you've got worksheets to do. Or you can go to your app store on your phone, pin the words Heartland, all one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And on your phone, you can walk through the step-by-step process. Jeannie has put two different forms of the forgiveness process, two different worksheets, a longer form and a shorter form. There's a children's game called the Dragon Klingon game in the app, so you can introduce forgiveness to children. And it's kind of fun because, you know, when they answer the questions or, you know, do the steps, the dragon roars, that sort of thing in the game. And you can also tap into the commitment, which is a set of words designed to be a personal code for how to retrain your mind and your so-called body to live in a state of connected love. So all of those things are in the app. Download it. Use it free. And so that's our lesson on what is the world. And Miss Jeannie, I suspect that having covered that, and maybe we want to separate, I think that's the first time I've actually done this whole lesson in a radio show, although we may have done it back 5, 6, 7 years ago, but maybe we could separate this one out as one of the special shows, and it covers the whole lesson. There's actually a video on our YouTube channel. I do some whiteboard work with it, so you can go to the YouTube channel. I think I heard Ari Rain in there.
Yeah, she came
I can
out.
Hear your voice, Jeannie.
She wanted to wear my upright necklace.
Hey there, Ari Rain. How are you, sweetie?
Papa's saying hello. Can you say hello?
I'm fixing it.
She says she's fixing it. Can you
she's
say what her phone number is? It's 563. Do you remember what the next numbers are?
She does.
She's not going to talk.
She probably won't say it. She's not going to say it on cue.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We are blessed.
But we don't
We've
have
had
any
an awesome
hands up.
Morning this morning.
Yeah, she spent
okay,
the night with
well,
us last night.
Yeah, we got to keep her all night, and that was pretty cool, pretty sweet. This morning, as Jeannie was waking her up, she said, "The sleep's still coming off of me," which I thought was pretty cute. And then we've gotten her a gratitude journal, and this morning, she, you know, once we finished breakfast, she's like, "I want to do my gratitude for today." It's like, boy, I wish I'd been three and had the brain cells for, "I want to do my gratitude today." I wish I'd been 30 and had the brain cells for, "I want to do my gratitude today." Golly.
And we're very
be?
Blessed that her first gratitude was, quote, "you guys," unquote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, today was "you guys," was Nini and Papa. Yesterday it was, or the day before yesterday, it was Mom and Dad, and she has her favorite stuffed toy, which is dog meat. So they were her three gratitudes for 3 days ago, but or 3 days back when we were doing it with her. So today it was Nini and Papa. That's pretty sweet. We are blessed. So I can't imagine that there aren't at least 1,000 questions out there. Every person that's been listening, I'm sure if I were, you know, in your hometown on a platform at your local library and you attended as I walked off, you'd come and say, "Michael, what about?" Or how does...
We have a hand up.
Or, great, let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hey, it's been a long time. I'm coming up for air. Thank you
Great.
For the long
Well, good to
talk,
hear your voice.
Michael.
How are you, young lady?
Well, you know, I'm in a state of fear, so I was listening to what you said, and I thought, this is too high and almighty for me, but I understand what Michael's saying. I'm just not doing
well,
it.
Well, we're
right
here
now.
To support you. What's happening? What's the fear thing
well,
to be
about?
What's your mind telling you the fear is?
My middle son of my daughter's, Jacob, called me 3 or 4 days ago and said that he needed somebody to talk to, and he was crying. He's 21.
Mm.
He
right.
said, I've ruined myself, he said. I've totally ruined myself. I said, tell me in what ways. And he said, my short-term memory is completely shot. My vocal range is gone. Mm. I can't seem to remember how to do my homework. I can't pay my bills. I can't even find the bills. And I said, Jacob, what are you doing differently? What's happening? And he said, I've gone off everything that I was taking. And when he was living here, he hid stuff. And when I cleaned up after he left, I found paraphernalia of every possible kind. And so I said, well, what are you detoxing? Because you're detoxing, and this is normal for and I, Michael, I'm talking through my hat. I don't know what I'm saying.
Right.
But I said, you're in a detox state, so tell me what you've gone off of. He said, I've gone off pot, LSD, nicotine, and booze. And I said,
wow,
you're doing
quite a load.
All at once? all at once? And he said, yeah, I just went cold turkey. And I said, are you safe? Should we get you to a hospital? You need a lot of support, and I'm 5 hours away, and it's I can't get there, you know. He said, maybe I should. And I said, well, Jacob, for the time being, just stay with me and talk to me. Well, we talked and we talked and we talked and we talked well into the night. And I said, Jacob, how have you been sleeping? He said, terrible. I said, are you taking stuff for sleeping? Because I know you used to. Yes, I take trazodone, he said. So I said, well, you know that there are probably ways to clean up all of that stuff without drugs, but I think maybe tonight's a night to take one of those and go to bed and let yourself have a big rest. And he said, you think so? You think so? So I said, yes. And he said, oh, but my phone charger, it's almost dead. And I said, is there a store nearby? Yes, there's one down the block. I will walk with you, I said. Walk to the store and buy a new charger. Okay. So we're talking all the way to the store. He buys the charger. I don't know what the salesperson must have thought. His eyes probably look like omelets. And he comes home and he plugs it in. He says, good, I can still talk. And I said, well, brush your teeth. I felt as if I was coaching a three-year-old, brush your teeth.
Right, and okay, it sounded like you were.
Get into bed. Okay, I'm in bed. Okay. Have you taken your trazodone? No. Okay, I took it. Took 2 seconds. I said, you mean you just swallowed it dry? Yeah, I always do. I said, Jacob, drink 8 ounces of water minimum. Go do it. I said, you're just going to eat your stomach lining with that stuff without proper water, and it won't go into your blood. You've got to do it right. You probably haven't ever been taking that right. So he said, okay. So he drinks the water. He gets back in bed. And we talked until he said, I think I'm okay for the night now. So that was our night. And it went, you know, until 10 or 11. I forget what it was. I said,
Well, that sounds exciting to me.
Yeah, well, it's been 3 days. We've been texting and talking. He has managed to go to his job, which is at Dunkin' Donuts. He says, when I'm there, I'm okay because I just don't think. I just zone out, and he's very good at it. But I just had another talk with him, and he's frightened. I said, Jake, you're still detoxing. You sound a lot better than you did before, but you've really put your body through the wringer. And I said, you're not taking anything now, not one thing. And he said, no, I'm not taking anything. And
is he eating food?
Yeah, he has a lot of, he's anorexic, really. He's very, very thin. And he says, I try to eat. I forget to eat. I said, what are you eating? He said, well, I eat what I can. And I know what he eats. Bags of chips, lots of candy. Yeah, the worst possible nutrition-free, which I love what you say, food. I said, well, there are certain things that you can do without needing medication. But I don't need to tell you all this, Michael. I mean, it goes on. What I'm feeling is terribly anxious. And I know the worksheets, I've done the worksheets, but I'm just vibrating with anxiety on his behalf.
How awesome. But notice you can't vibrate with anxiety on anybody's behalf but your own, young lady.
Okay, well, that's what I'm doing.
Your grandson has shown you, your grandson has two things I find exciting here, reasons to be rejoiceful and in delight about. One, he could be on his own talking to nobody and be dead.
Oh,
and
God.
Or still getting deeper into the drug game, which ultimately would likely kill him. So the fact that he's talking to you and coming out of it sounds pretty exciting to me, and asking for and receiving your support. So that to me is one exciting thing. Would I have some concerns about his safety? Yes, but, you know, all of that was going on and 10 times worse when there was no conversation and no effort to do something about it. So it seems pretty exciting to say, whew, he's called me and trusts me to help him work through this. And that is a big responsibility. And it sounds like the second thing to me that's exciting is that when you say I'm vibrating with this anxiety, Whose physiology is vibrating? Whose opportunity is this to clear out another whole layer of anxiety? You remember you used to have that anti-anxiety medication and you did your work and you cleared it out? Well, here's the next layer and the next level, because what's vibrating in you is vibrating in you because it's in you, not him.
That's good to be reminded of.
So he's
that
showing you your next piece of work, which, you know, if we're going to do our work, somebody has to bring it up. And it sounds like perhaps he's ready to join, and this might be some powerful language to use with him. You know, grandson, I'm realizing that I've got some deep anxiety, and my mind's telling me it's about what you're going through and your anxiety. The truth is I'm realizing it's my own. How about if we join in doing some work together on both of us healing our anxiety for the whole family system?
He might be open to that.
Well,
he's been, you know,
it sounds like he's ready.
Yeah, maybe.
And so I join you in breathing and getting centered and knowing that we're here to hold the space and support you both as you step into, and probably as the communication continues with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard me say before, now he's not your child, but your grandchild. You know, you've heard me say before that having a child is like having your unconscious mind hang out in true living color and Dolby sound, because everything you've never resolved, they're going to bring up. So here he is bringing it up for you, Grandma. And you don't heal it unless it comes up.
Right.
So that's
good to be
pretty,
reminded.
To me, that's profoundly exciting that this young man has stepped into the space. And, you know, this could be the thing that opens the pattern you've been looking for. How am I going to get Jonathan through? How am I going to get, you know, Charlie through? How am I going to get each of these through this? And Tim as well. Well, this may be the gateway that you've been asking for. And as you stay conscious and do your work, you'll become a more powerful space for him to do his work. He'll become a more powerful space to bring it up for you, you know, and the cycle moves upward for the whole family system, critical mass, the leavening that leavens the whole loaf.
Mm-hmm. This is very helpful. Yeah.
And, you know, recognizing that this is, you know, I think back to some of the work that Tim did in the early days of being on the show and the intensive and such, and doing the work around the family dynamic of anxiety and trauma and the space that you've both been opening. And, you know, this is the genetics that are being opened and healed. Are you breathing?
I'm breathing. Thanks.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's good to have it. Yeah, I was remembering the lesson in The Course in Miracles. We are never upset for the reason we think. And I was telling myself that, but I just couldn't bring it around to...
It sounds like the, you know, the big family dynamic, you know, from everything we've talked about over the last couple of years is confronting these unconscious dynamics of anxiety within the whole family system.
There's an awful lot of it. Yeah. There are some really good things happening on the other side, too. Just that Jonathan said...
Tell me.
2 days, he said, I'm finally working at what I love. I didn't have to leave medicine. I just had to put my foot down and say, this is what I need. Take it or leave it. I can't stay unless you can use me this way. And he named the things, working on emergencies, you know, putting out fires, working on emergencies, cleaning up the way they run the hospital. He's actually doing some administrative stuff. He says, I'm really loving it. No more diarrhea
every
morning, he says. It is awesome. And because of that, yep. his boy, Charlie, seems better. He's not out of the woods. I'm going to his doctor with him this afternoon, but he is also better. And now it's like I get one it's like whack-a-mole, one pops up and the other.
Well, you know, when you realize that we live in a world of resonance, that's exactly what happens. You know, one person in the family system creates an opening and does a piece of work that creates a vitality connected through the whole system. So things start to move in everybody else. And each person who does another piece of work that's connected in that family system, it's going to tend to vitalize everyone as each layer is peeled off.
Okay.
And you know, remember the symptoms of healing are not Dr. Feelgood.
No, clearly not.
And
so
I remember
Michael,
to become the thinker apart from the thought, feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and observe and move through it.
Tim and I are working with refugees, and we've gotten a bunch coming in, and there's no housing
right.
here. So I need your blessing on doing something that we're too scared to do, but we're doing it. We're taking in a Sudanese woman for 3 to 6 to 9 months, and we're just going to be living with her, and she doesn't speak English. And, you know, we're introverts and stuff. So I'll keep you posted.
Well,
she arrives in about 2 weeks.
There is a language that all three of you speak in common.
Love.
It's called the breath.
Oh, okay, cool.
The breath. When you can't say a word to her, you can demonstrate what the still point breathing process looks like, invite her to relax and to breathe. Even if you can't, you know, if you don't have a common language, a common word, you can demonstrate, you can physiologically show her how to connect her breath, how to move through the breath. And then, you know, with touch, offer her the assurance that she's safe as she breathes.
Mm-hmm.
To feel and move through whatever comes up.
And it's going to be a lot.
If she's come from the Sudan, it's probably going to be pretty heavy duty. Yeah.
Right.
But here's,
right. And we don't
here's
know
the
if,
biggest piece. Go ahead.
I was going to say,
we don't know if she
has children left behind.
Hmm.
We're not sure she has children left behind. She's coming alone. She's 46 or
right.
7 years old. All right, what were you saying?
Just saying that to assure her through gentle, nurturing touch, and even if you can't speak to her about breathing, just indicate, you know, through sign language, just indicate. Follow this pattern of breathing. Let your breath move. And then when the trauma starts to move her, which it likely will, to stay connected and stay safe and just keep your breath moving as a demonstration that she can do the same, whatever moves, whatever trauma. And she may be carrying from the Sudan such terrors as we could never imagine. But here's the thing. You can trust the breath to handle that if you can stay centered in the breath and just support her doing the same. That, remember, the breath is Ruka Dukucha. It is what the Greeks called the Holy Spirit. And you can support her by letting her know she's safe to do that. And you can trust the breath to do it.
Great. Good.
And we're going to be cut off in a few seconds, but, you know, just over the last 40 years of working with people with the breath, with every kind of terror and trauma you can imagine, that whatever it is, no matter how much of a disaster it is, if that individual can just keep the breath moving, the breath will clear the trauma energy out of the field. And to remember that for yourself, if the trauma moving in her moves trauma in you, to recognize the trauma moving in you is yours, and you can breathe through it, and you can trust the breath to handle it.